Now, some of you may know that I work in human resources. You can throw fruit and veg at me in a minute, that's absolutely fine, but do save some for others, because I'm not the only HR person within the congregation, okay? So I've been working in HR now for about 18 years. During those 18 years, I've worked for a number of different employers in a number of different sectors. But one thing has sort of always been a constant in HR roles, and that's the need to recruit and to find people to come in. And when you recruit people, you're basically trying to do two things. You're trying to make the role and the job sound as interesting and as great as possible, so it's dynamic. Every day is a fresh challenge. You'll be valued, etc., etc. We've all heard it before. And then you don't talk about the megalomaniac boss. You don't talk about the fact that sometimes the sewage backs up or that the commute is an absolute nightmare. All of those things you try to hide away. So today, thinking about the gospel reading, when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me, I wonder if we can think of a worse way to try and get people to actually join the cause, so to speak. And I suppose at this stage it's helpful to think perhaps about the context of what's happening here. So we heard, first of all, the Old Testament reading, and we heard about the original covenant that God made with his chosen people. And what happened next? Well, we know what happened next. The chosen people, mankind, we mucked it up. We couldn't follow the instructions that God was giving us. We kept on making mistakes. And really that culminates in the gospel story itself. Jesus, the Son of God, arrives, comes down to earth amongst the chosen people. They fail to recognize him. He is rejected and he is crucified. So that's the context in human history, if you like. What about the context of the gospel reading in the Gospel of Mark itself? Well, it's quite interesting because actually it's all about identity and the visuals. So immediately before this story, we have Jesus restoring the sight to a blind man, and we have a discussion between Jesus and his disciples about who Jesus actually is. And he is, Peter describes him as the Messiah, and Jesus immediately charges Peter not to tell anybody about this. But the Messiah is that sense of kingship. And immediately after this story, indeed, we have the Transfiguration, which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. But it's all about identity, and it's all about sight. I wonder if this point, if any of you know the story of Cassandra, the Trojan princess. I know it's a bit of a funny link, but work with me on this one. Cassandra was the daughter of King Priam of Troy, and she caught the eye so the story goes, of the Greek god Apollo. However, she spurned his advances, and in response, Apollo cursed her in quite a unique way. He said that she would always tell the truth when she prophesied, but that nobody would ever believe her. And that happened throughout her life, even to the point of where she predicted her own death. And again, nobody would believe her. And this really is happening today in the gospel reading. Jesus, we're told, speaks plainly. He talks about the fact that he will be rejected. He talks about his suffering. He talks about his death. He even talks about his resurrection. But nobody seems to be taking it at face value. Indeed, Peter even rebukes Jesus. He takes him to one side and rebukes him. And although in this gospel reading we don't actually hear what Peter says, in other gospels we hear he says things like, oh, Lord, no, it cannot be. I won't let that happen. You know, you'll stay safe with us, etc., etc. Now, I think this clearly... this clearly brings us seamlessly onto the Jaws films. So believe it or not, it does bring us seamlessly onto the Jaws films. So in the Jaws films, there are four of them. I'm sure you're intimately aware of each and every scene of the four films. They seem to all start off with the same point in the first half hour or so. And this is the fact that the police chief Brody, is trying to run around telling everyone that there's a giant shark eating everyone. And these luckless swimmers are disappearing at a rate of knots. Yet for the first half hour of the film, nobody believes him. They all think there's no chance this can be the case, and certainly there's no chance that it could happen four times in a row in exactly the same place. But nonetheless, this is what happens. And again, we have it here. People are not seeing the big picture. And instead, they've got their mind on human affairs. Indeed, Jesus even says to Peter, you only have the human concerns to mind. You're not concerned with the will of the Father, in effect. And that's not to say that human concerns aren't important, but they're partially formed and they're very much secondary to the will of God. I'm going to go off on a slight tangent here and just say there's a phrase within this that jars a bit with me, and I wonder if it jars with some of you as well. When Jesus says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan," that always feels a bit of a strange thing to say. And in looking into this, I think there's two explanations for that. One is the suggestion that maybe Satan was whispering to Peter and saying to Peter, you know, "Go on, put him off, go on, see if you can get him to do something else." And therefore, Jesus is perhaps speaking directly to Satan. The other explanation is perhaps that it's a slight mistranslation. And instead of Satan, we should read that as maybe somebody who is a challenge or an adversary. And so Jesus is saying to Peter, don't stop me from doing this. This is difficult enough as it is. Don't try and talk me out of it. I think I prefer that explanation because it points to me to how Jesus was both fully man and fully God, and that is very much his Jesus's humanity stepping into the fore. So that's a bit of a tangent there. But what about what Jesus says next? Well, Jesus says that we need to deny ourselves, we need to take up our cross, and we need to follow him. Well, I get why we have to follow Jesus. That does make sense. He is the role model. He points towards God, and indeed in following God and being like Jesus, that in itself is pleasing to God. I get why we have to deny ourselves. I think we'll all recognize the fact that we can be very egocentric. We do have base desires that we crave to be fulfilled. And indeed, in being more like Christ, who was entirely selfless, of course, we turn away from those base desires and we try to become like him and more selfless. So in a way, the second flows from the first. But what about taking up that cross? That's a difficult one. And I suppose the link that I could find here amongst cultural icons was the portrayal of Frodo Baggins in Lord of the Rings. Now, many of you, I'm sure, are very familiar with this story, but Frodo doesn't take up a cross, but he does take up a ring. And there's many similarities, I suppose, between the gospel stories and what happens in Lord of the Rings, not least the fact that there are seeming contradictions. So just as Jesus is as an unlikely hero as you might imagine in some respects, so same of the hobbits. The hobbits are not especially strong, they're not especially wise, they're rather comical characters in many respects. The ring itself, we're told this is a ring of immense power, yet it is tiny, and for much of the time, many people come across the ring and assume it is just a sort of curious trinket and nothing more than that. However, there is a place where I think the comparison diverges quite a lot. In Tolkien's world, it's quite clear why Frodo Baggins needs to take up his cross, or in this case, take up the ring. He has to destroy the ring. He has to carry it to this particular place and ensure its destruction. And whilst I think Tolkien, as a strict Roman Catholic and somebody who took his faith immensely seriously, would have recognised the similarities between cross-bearer and ring-bearer, I don't think we can use the same answer. I don't think any of us are carrying a cross to dump in a fiery mountain at the pit of somewhere surrounded by orcs and goblins. So this kind of raises the question of suffering. Why do we need to take up our crosses? Well, possibly, perhaps, Christ's next words kind of provide the clue to that. One of my favourite themes within the Gospel is the fact that Jesus turns things upside down. So the first will be last, the servant king, the very resurrection itself, the very crucifixion and resurrection itself, something which should be seen as secondary becomes first. And we have it again here. Whoever wishes to save their life must lose it. Within the mystery of faith, and certainly within the uniqueness of the Trinity, I think there are some amazing things that start to happen. And I think we have to have faith that those amazing things happen. If I can give a separate example, we are all immensely blessed to be here today. There are certain things which have come together that have allowed us to come here today and to call ourselves Christians. Had we been born in a different place, in a different time, perhaps those circumstances wouldn't have come together. Now, there must be some way in which God and in which Christ provides the same opportunities that we have had and that we have accepted to other people who live in different parts of the world or who live in different times. And that is a mystery. In this, in today's gospel, Jesus does talk about the sinful and adulterous nature of our generation. And I think part of that is a tendency to, if you like, know-it-allism. If we cannot explain something logically, if we cannot actually share it with others and argue it from a logical point of view, we tend to describe it as worthless and say that that there's no point in worrying about it. But I don't think that is the case. And clearly here, Christ is saying that there is value in suffering. There's value in losing our lives, whatever that actually happens to mean. And he also says the reason for this is because of our souls. Now, why are souls important? Well, I think the only explanation can be that it is within the soul itself that we have our similarity to God. We are told that we are created in the image of God. It cannot be our physical nature. I certainly hope in many ways it's not our emotional or our mental nature. So it feels sensible that it must be the soul itself where that similarity resides. So, I haven't really given an answer to why it's important that we take up our cross. And I don't know why, but I do trust from a point of view of faith that it must be true. And I trust because of a personal relationship with Christ. It's not something that I can logically argue with others, but that doesn't make the evidence any less compelling to me. I don't hear God. I don't receive text messages or emails from him, or if I do, I'm not getting them. They're going to the spam filter or something like that. But I do find that he gently suggests things to me, and he draws my curiosity in a particular direction. It's often only when I look back that I actually see that that's happened. Moreover, when in today's gospel reading, when Christ does rebuke Peter, he doesn't try and argue it from a logical point of view. He simply says, "This is the will of God." That is the end of the argument. There is no need for further explanation. So, in summary, I'm sorry that I failed to answer the question. And I'm especially sorry to those of you who have especially burdensome crosses to carry, because there will be some of you out there. But I do wonder if I can just leave you with a couple of quotes, if I may. And apologies, I will have to read from the phone at this point. So the first one is from Lord of the Rings, and it's taken from the film version rather than the book version, I'm afraid to say. But it is about Gandalf and Pippin, one of the hobbits, when they feel that they're facing certain death. And Pippin says, I didn't think it would end this way. And Gandalf replies, end? No, the journey doesn't end here. Death is just another path, and one that we all must take. The grey curtain of this world rolls back, and all turns to silver glass. And then you see it. What, Gandalf? What? And Gandalf talks about this green, pleasant land of eternal sunshine and brightness. And then Pippin replies, well, that doesn't seem so bad, does it? And Gandalf says, no, it doesn't. And then the second quote I just wanted to leave you with is from Billy Graham. And Billy Graham obviously said a huge amount, but he said one of the things which I think is important. He said, go to the mountaintops. That's where you'll get your wonder, your sense of wonder and your inspiration. But it's in the valleys, it's down in the valleys that the fruit really grows. Okay. So I wish you that blessing in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.